Thank you, Rabbi Glenn, and Shabbat Shalom. This week's Torah portion is entitled Ki Tetzé, which means when you go out, and covers Deuteronomy chapter 21, verse 10 to chapter 25, verse 19. This passage deals with issues related to morality, marriage, divorce, following through on vows, and other issues. We will not be able to cover every topic that is presented in this passage, so I would suggest that you read through it to get the full picture. Chapter 21, as Rabbi Glenn just read, deals with the issue of a woman captured in battle. If the soldier is pleased with this woman, she should be brought to his house, but be given a month to mourn her family before marriage can take place. We also read that if a man has two wives, one loved and one unloved, and if the unloved wife has the firstborn son, the husband is not allowed to bestow the firstborn's inheritance on the second son, who is the son of the woman that he loves. The firstborn must receive his just inheritance. Chapter 22 contains various laws, such as returning a lost animal to its rightful owner, helping an animal, such as an ox, who has perhaps fallen down into a ditch, to get out of that ditch and be returned to its owner. We also read about not sowing a vineyard with two different kinds of seeds, not plowing a field with a donkey and ox combination, or wearing a garment of two mixed materials, let's say such as wool and linen together. The second half of this chapter deals with issues such as a challenge to a newly married bride's virginity, a punishment for a man who sleeps with a married woman, punishment for a man who forces himself on a woman who is engaged to be married, and also a commandment for a son not to have marital relations with his father's wife. Chapter 23 begins with those who must be excluded from assembling before the Lord, such as eunuchs, those of illegitimate birth, and Ammonites and Moabites, who hired Balaam to curse the Israelites. You can read about that in Numbers chapter 22. But Edomites should not be deprived of assembling, since they are related to the Israelites. Nor should the Egyptians be not allowed or excluded, since our people lived in the land of Egypt for a time. The sons of the third generation of both of these people will be allowed to enter the Lord's assembly. The end of this chapter has some further laws regarding money. No earnings from prostitution, either male or female, can be brought as an offering to the Lord. Israelis should not be charged any interest, but interest may be charged to a non-Israeli. And if a vow is made before the Lord, it must be followed through, for it will be required. Chapter 24 starts with laws regarding divorce, such as if a man marries a woman, but later finds something objectionable and writes a certificate of divorce, and she goes out and marries another man, and he ends up having issues and writes a certificate of divorce, the woman cannot return to marry her first husband. Additionally, if a man marries, he will not have to immediately go into military service, but he can have 1 year to spend with his new wife. The rest of this chapter also contains some additional laws, such as not taking a handmill or a millstone as a pledge, because this will disrupt the method of earning a living for the person that it is taken from. There is an admonition against kidnapping someone, being careful about the infection of leprosy, not oppressing a hired servant, and making sure that a hired person's wages are paid for his labor on that day before sunset. The orphan, the alien, and the widow must be allowed to have justice, so none of their garments can be taken as a pledge for a debt. Also, after the harvest is reaped and some of the barley or wheat remains in the field, it must be left for those less fortunate. Chapter 25 continues with additional laws, such as the number of lashes a man given a man if he loses a dispute based on a judge's decision, that number being no more than 40 lashes. We also read about levirate marriage, when a family containing brothers lives together and one of the brothers dies, and if he and his wife have no son, then the other brother who is left should marry her. We read that in the case where the brother does not want to marry the other brother's widow, there would be quite an issue, to the extent that the elders of the city could get involved. And if he still refused to get married, despite the elders' urging, he would be considered disgraced in society as one who refused to build up his brother's house, thus emphasizing family responsibility. Finally, we have a reminder at the end of this parasha that we should never forget about Amalek, who attacked the Israeli people from behind, where the old and weak were located as we were leaving Egypt. Even though the Lord would give the Israelis rest from all their other enemies, all of Amalek's descendants needed to be blotted out. So here are some thoughts about Parsha Tetzé. We need to conduct our lives in a morally upright way. The moral decline in this country keeps accelerating. In this atmosphere, with things deteriorating around us, we need to be ever more vigilant and diligent that we are living lives based on the guidance found within the Word of God, the Bible. This parasha also contains admonitions for both marriage and divorce. Yeshua had something to say about both subjects. In Matthew 19, when he is asked if it is lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any cause, and that Moses said that certificates of law should be given, Yeshua said, "Because of your hardness of heart, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives." There are many instances, even today, that when we harden our hearts in marriage, which means being prideful, we start the process of eroding our marriages. We slowly stop communicating with our spouses. We stop working on what we can do to better the marriage. And in our minds, the problem with our marriage is not us, but the other person. We can't change our partner, but we can change ourselves and work on what we can do to be better in a marriage. We need to put away our pride and unselfishly commit to making our marriages the best that they can be. Finally, as I read through this parasha with all the instructions that it contained, and if I were to ask you to list all the instructions that I just read in this short 7 or 8 minutes, I wonder how many you could actually jot down. I wrote the parasha, I would probably get less than a quarter. So, or the commentary, I would probably get less than a quarter. This is how many admonitions and commandments, instructions that we have. So as I read this parasha with all the instructions it contained, I was reminded of John 14:6, where Yeshua said, very simply, "I am the way and the truth and the life." Our parasha contains instructions that, when they were followed, allowed for a more successful life because people were obeying God's commandments. This is very reminiscent to what Jesus said in John 14:6. We need instructions for our lives to live in a godly manner. In other words, we need a way, a path, or a roadmap to guide us. This guidance can be found in the Bible. When we follow that path or roadmap for our lives, it leads us to the truth, which is Yeshua, which then leads to life, life eternal, because we have found our way to his saving grace. Shabbat shalom.